You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Giotakis. Today, we take you behind the scenes of a small-town mayor's office in the San Jacinto Mountains, southwest of Palm Springs.
Mayor Max's office, this is Phyllis.
Phyllis Mueller is the mayor's chief of staff. She answers his phone. She updates his Instagram and Facebook accounts. She keeps the mayor on time with his busy schedule.
It's nice to meet you. How are you? Yes, we are available today. We could be...
Mueller also gets the mayor his drinks whenever he's thirsty. But he doesn't drink coffee, tea, or Diet Coke. You'll never see him with a glass of wine at an event. Water is all this mayor drinks, and it's from a bowl. Mayor Max is a dog. A 6-year-old golden retriever on the job in Idlewild, a sleepy town surrounded by pine and cedar trees and famous rock formations. Roughly 15,000 people live in Idlewild. Mayor Max doesn't care which political party they support. His platform is totally nonpartisan, and his message is simple. Here's how his chief of staff puts it.
The mayor's charter is to help make the world a better place by conveying unconditional love and doing as many good deeds for others as possible.
Kirsten Zilm drove up the mountain to meet this special breed of politician.
Here we go! Yay!
He says hello, Max. We're going to the truck.
Mayor Max's pickup truck rolls into Idlewild and parks in front of a store that stands out between rustic restaurants, an ice cream parlor, and a souvenir shop because it has a humongous cowboy hat over the door. Fans gather to greet the canine mayor who jumps around on the truck bed. He wears a red plaid tie. His chief of staff adds a brown hat. Then Mayor Max is ready for his close-up with constituents and visitors.
Are you ready to pose, honey?
Yes.
You are. Okay, here we go.
Oh my God.
Mr. Mayor, let's do the pose. Are you ready?
Phyllis Mueller cheers him on to pose for selfies. She is a middle-aged woman in black sweatpants, a baseball cap with an American flag and sequins perched on her long gray blonde hair. She shakes a bag of dog food and holds treats up in the air.
Chicken, turkey, bacon, 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 bacon. Close your mouth all the way, buddy. All the way.
Good dog. You're amazing.
A constant stream of admirers surrounds the truck. They want to shake Mayor Max's paw, pet his fluffy golden brown fur, and just see for themselves that he really does exist.
I drove by and I've been wanting to see the mayor, and I saw the mayor, I had to jump out of the car, no shoes on. We think dogs are the best kind of people, and we heard a lot about Mayor Max, and we just think it's so progressive.
Okay, go flat-handed.
I think it's adorable. I think it's just fun to have something different that's lighthearted, political-wise.
No platforms, no agendas, no disingenuous speeches.
And he's all worth it. He lives up to the hype. He is nothing but a gentleman.
How can a dog be a mayor, you might ask? Well, first of all, Idlewild is an unincorporated town governed by the county of Riverside. That means there is no official city government. It never had a human mayor. The idea of a pet taking the office came from the local nonprofit Animal Rescue Friends in 2012 as a fundraiser for the organization. They asked residents to nominate their dog or cat. Votes were for sale at $1 apiece. Citizens of Idlewild nominated 14 dogs and 2 cats. Phyllis and her husband shamelessly bought the election for their candidate, Maximus Mighty Dog Mueller, with a check for $20,000.
Obviously, I wanted to help the organization, but really what I most wanted was for my dog to be the mayor so that I could create a fun and wonderful, loving, kind mayor's office for Idlewild.
And that's what she and her husband did. Apart from showing up to spread some love in town and to take pictures, the mayor and his deputies promote local businesses, visit hospital patients and the terminally ill, attend fundraisers, private parties, and the tree lighting ceremony. Mayor Max represents Idlewild's spirit, says the editor of the local paper, the Town Crier, Melissa Diaz-Hernandez.
We have this mayor now who's become really like the symbol of Idlewild. I mean, there are people across the country and I think world who know about Idlewild because of Mayor Max.
He never causes controversies and has other traits rarely seen in politicians.
He's a really well-behaved dog. I think he's the only mayor that gets away with taking a nap on the job.
This Mayor Max is actually the second dog on the job. Mayor Max the first also was a golden retriever. He died in 2013, shortly after his term was extended to a second year. Phyllis found three puppies that are related to him, distant cousins. Mayor Max the second started his job when he was only 11 weeks old. At that time, he did nap a lot. By now, he barely gets to rest. Especially when times get rough in town, like during recent road closures up the mountain, or when Idlewild had to be evacuated because of the Cranston fire. In times like that, the mayor brings even more smiles to everybody, including exhausted firefighters.
He was kind of on the job even during the fire, you know, like we were helping with other rescues and things like that, trying to get, you know, the horses out and all that kind of stuff. And I went to the fire department, talked to the chief, and I said, what can we do to help? And he goes, go out and thank the fire crews. You know, so that's what we did.
For Phyllis Mueller, tasks and responsibilities that come with the job are fun, but not a joke. She always answers the mayor's phone, even when it's a prank call in the middle of the night. Her hard work has been rewarded. Mayor Max now is elected for life at the request of his constituents. Everybody in Idlewild loves him, like 8-year-old Layla Martin.
When we did the tree lighting ceremony, I met the mayor, and it was really cool because, like, it's a dog, what?
And Mim Andrews from the local jerky store.
Most people are dog people, thrilled that our mayor is a dog. I mean, we're governed by unconditional love and acts of kindness. Why wouldn't you like that?
Running the mayor's office has become a second full-time job for Phyllis and her husband Glenn. Their first jobs are in marketing and sales. They pay all the mayor's expenses and have not been on vacation since Mayor Max the first was elected. Phyllis says it is all worth it. She's involved with her community, but without the difficulty of real politics.
What a wonderful opportunity to be the mayor of Idlewild in a non-political way and not take sides on issues or have a city council forcing me to do something I didn't want to do and creating all the drama and dialogue of those two or three sides to issues.
After a day of posing, shaking hands, and eating lots of treats, Mayor Max gets some exercise in the backyard of his office.
All right, we're going to do two more, Max, and then we're going to go in the house. Ready? Ready? Okay, and this will be the last one, and you're on break.
He has another event scheduled for the evening. The local film festival asked for his presence, and of course, Mayor Max will not miss a chance to spread his message and some love. For KCRW, I'm Kerstin Zinn.
He says he loves you. These are your friends, Max. They're your friends.
Bye, Max, Mayor. We love you.
Thank you.
Well, the stresses of being mayor can be tough on a dog, and so can other things in everyday life. If you're a dog owner, you know what I'm talking about, or even if you're a cat owner. Some folks actually turn to pot, or at least a part of pot. Cannabidiol, or CBD, is a part of marijuana that's non-psychoactive. That's the part that doesn't make you high. And it's becoming popular as a drug to help with problems such as anxiety and joint pain. Now, veterinarians aren't allowed to prescribe CBD, but California is the only state that allows a vet to initiate a discussion with their clients about things such as CBD dog treats and topical creams. And some pet owners swear by them. Chloe LaPrairie is the founder of a rescue called Scrappy Paws Foundation. She uses CBD remedies with many of her pets, and she joined us right now. Hi, Chloe.
Hello.
Thank you for being with us. First of all, how did you hear about CBD products, and why did you start using them with your pets?
Well, so back in October of last year, we took in this kitten that was paralyzed. She was not able to move, and we really couldn't find a veterinarian that would treat her because they thought that there was nothing that could be done. And so we thought, since maybe I had heard of CBD oil before, I had done some research, seeing that it could sometimes help with anti-inflammatory and pain. And so I reached out to a couple companies that make it, see if anybody was willing to donate to this special case. And we had a couple amazing companies who sent us some CBD oil, and we try it. tried it for this little kitten who could not move at the time. With that and then some other medications that she got later on, she made a full recovery and is now a completely healthy cat with no issues. We've used it for kittens with seizures and with dogs that have bad anxiety.
I'm joined by a veterinarian, by the way, in Studio City, a man named Dr. Shadi Arefej, who has a clinic there in the Valley. Doctor, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What are the rules here in California for talking about CBD professionally? Apparently, doctors cannot prescribe it, but what do you say to someone who has an animal that they want to give CBD to?
Yeah, so prior to 2018, we weren't really allowed to discuss much of it. And not even discussion, forget trying to sell it or prescribe it or recommend it. And then since, I think, 2018, we're now allowed to actually have a discussion on it, which makes our lives a lot easier because, as you've already mentioned, and as Chloe's mentioned as well, its use has become very, very popular, not only in people but also in animals. And so now at this point, it seems that most of my discussions revolve around owners bringing up the use of CBD or CBD oil with their pets for a variety of conditions, and simply asking myself or my colleagues here at True Care for Pets whether or not it's okay or safe to use it, and can it be used in conjunction with the medications they're currently on.
Well, let's talk about the science of it, because it is becoming, as you say, very popular. Is the science there to support using CBD products? Have they been proven to work?
So as of current, when I've done my latest research on PubMed.com, which is a medical literature website, it seemed that there have been several studies in the past few years focusing on mostly dogs and using CBD and related products on a variety of conditions, everything from arthritis to epilepsy. And so the evidence is coming out, and a lot of these studies, although they are few and far between, but a lot of these studies are becoming more frequent, and they're also becoming quite convincing that we're actually already seeing some beneficial effects. Now, every study, just like any medical literature, needs to be looked at closely for its flaws and also how the study is constructed. But there's been research, and it's becoming more and more frequent.
Chloe, that's the science that the doctor's talking about. Anecdotally, how has it worked with your animals? What have you seen? And how can you tell if your animals are in need of CBD?
You know, so we took in a kitten that had seizures, and because she was so young, not a lot of vets wanted to prescribe medication for it. And so we started CBD oil, and she didn't have any more seizures now, and we were able to keep an eye on her, monitor her until she grew out of them. And, I mean, I have my own personal dog at home who does suffer from some anxiety, especially like on 4th of July with all the fireworks, the loud noises. That could be really scary to a dog, especially. And that's why on 4th of July, so many animals go missing because of the loud noises. And so we started trying CBD oil for her to see if that would calm her down during the scary fireworks. And it definitely did help a little bit. She wasn't as stressed out, as anxious, as freaked.
Doctor, is there a danger, do you think, of pet owners sort of anthropomorphizing their animals? You know, is there a danger in that? And what would you recommend?
You know, there's no way to separate us personifying what our pets are feeling or thinking from owning pets. It's never going to happen. So it's one of those situations where dangerous, I don't think so, only from the perspective of most pet owners. If they're going to assume they know what the pet's thinking, they're going to kind of err on the side of caution rather than ignore things. And so if they feel that their pet is anxious or fearful or in pain, then they're more likely to take the necessary steps towards seeking veterinary medical advice as opposed to ignoring them, even though we know that they are interpreting their pet's behaviors or thoughts as you would a person, which of course is something that we can't prove as the in the medical field.
We really can't. So, and I think about the times when, you know, like I remember growing up and my mom would be like, well, you know, the dog, you could tell the dog's not eating because, you know, she has teeth pain, right? Or so you know that something's going on. So my mom would, you know, give the dog like a quarter of a Tylenol or something like that. And it's like, well, how do you know that that's not destructive to the dog?
Yeah. And that's the importance of seeking a veterinarian, you know, somebody who's had years of experience in evaluating pets, not only based on objective testing, but also based on subjective tests, just like physical exams. And that's our best weapon to find out, okay, well, you have a pet with a perceived ailment, we're going to try medication A and reassess in some time period and figure out if there's now been a change. And you try to be as objective as you possibly can, knowing, of course, with animals, it's impossible to be 100% objective with these situations.
Chloe, did you have any trouble with the vet trying to, you know, stop you from getting the CBD or saying, you know, no, you really shouldn't do this?
You know, no, we never had a vet that was against it. Some of the vets that we saw in the beginning for some of these animals didn't even want to prescribe treatment at first in general. So when we went to other vets and were telling them exactly what we wanted to do, we had a plan in mind when we talked to the vet. They were on the same page as us. We never had an issue with it. And we've seemed to have good success with it.
Do the vets sell these products? Are you able to get them there? Or do you go on Amazon? Where do you get this stuff?
No, you can't get it from a vet's office. We go to some of the local pet stores have them, or you can get them online, which is what we've always done, because there are specific companies that make it just for animals.
So, doctor, what would you recommend to people like Chloe, to dog and cat owners who are having problems, whose pets may be a little more anxious than usual? Do you say, hey, try the CBD, or do you say, you know, maybe there are other things you can do?
Every veterinarian's tactics with this is going to be different. So it's a situation where I'd recommend first seeking veterinary advice from an experienced veterinarian that you trust and using conventional medicine or methods of treatment for whatever ailment you're trying to solve. The veterinarian is, at least in my experience, and I've been doing this over 13 years, almost 14 years now, I've never voluntarily recommended the use of CBD because of the legal restrictions behind discussing it, up until recently, of course. But even now, with the law, changes in the law, I have yet to actually bring up the topic. The majority of my pet owners will bring the topic up to me and ask me my opinion on it. And my advice, or rather my experience, is, as Chloe's mentioned, as you've also mentioned, is anecdotal. So I can't find a reason, medically speaking, to not allow my pet owners to use CBD products if they are using it, and I do not foresee any interactions with current medications, then I won't stop them. And I actually do recommend that they talk to other folks, whether medically trained or not, it's hard to say, who have more experience with the use of CBD in animals for whatever conditions, until we have more research that comes out, until the laws change where it eases up the grasp of our ability to discuss CBD.
Dr. Shadi Arefej, a veterinarian in Studio City. Chloe LaPrairie, a founder over at Scrappy Paws Foundation. I want to thank you both for the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Last week, reporter Kaylee Wells told us a story on electric vehicles, or EVs. Turns out you are pretty passionate about this subject, and we got a lot of questions and experiences and other feedback on the story, so we thought we would share some of that with you. And to do that, I'm joined by Kaylee and by our managing producer, Christian Bordahl. Kaylee, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Christian, start us off. What did we hear back from this story?
Well, let's start. There were a couple of listeners who felt like the story actually leaned negative or against EVs. One listener said he thought it left people feeling the EVs were not viable. So I wanted to give Kaylee a chance to respond to that.
Right. So full disclosure, I own an EV. It's a plug-in hybrid. And there are challenges to using the electricity, but that doesn't mean it wasn't worth it to me to buy one. So the whole point of the story was to share partially personal experience, but from being a renter and all of the challenges of having to use an EV, the different charger types when you're out doing public chargers, the charger companies and all of their different apps, all the ways their pricing works, those are all different. All of that varies, and all of that inconsistency leads to it being less convenient.
Less convenient, all right.
Yeah, and then our listener Linda Stark says she absolutely loves her Chevy Bolt. She owns one. She has a home where she installed her charger, so she's all set. She doesn't have to rent. But she writes that she did pull up to a charging station one time at a mall in Newbury Park and was supremely confused as to which station to use and how to set up an account with a charging app. All the spaces, she said, were full, and there was a Tesla that wasn't even charging that was parked in one of the spaces. It was a drag. She says also that if you end up with a level one charger at a Walmart or your local library, for example, you're going to be there for 8 hours just getting 32 miles worth of a charge. So, yeah, she says the charging infrastructure will have to improve, but the program today let us know that you're working on it. Yay. But the coolest thing, she said, is she installed solar panels last year, and she feels like she's driving around powered by the sun. That makes me feel really good. So thanks for the encouraging word about EVs on the program today.
Right. Linda didn't want to spend 8 hours at the Walmart.
She did not. Right. So, she doesn't have to.
She, Christian, she felt like the story was encouraging about EVs. So,
she did.
So talk about that.
Yeah, and she was full of positive energy. We also got some interesting feedback, though, from a listener called Paul Scott. He says that California law now actually allows any renter who has a dedicated parking spot the right to install their own charger, and Kaylee looked into that.
Right, so the law that Paul is talking about, it makes it so if you're a renter and you give a written formal request, the landlord has to listen to you and has to let you install that charger, as long as they have at least 5 parking spaces, and as long as at least 10% of those parking spots, or fewer than 10% of those parking spots, have an EV charger. But if you, the renter, you are the one that has to pay for the installation, you have to pay for the maintenance of your charger, and if you leave, they can ask you to pay for the removal of it as well.
All right. You're a renter, Kaylee,
right.
And you have an EV. How does it work in your building?
Well, so in my building, we've got 200 parking spots, and the landlord, about a couple months before this was going to apply to them, installed 20 EV chargers. So there's your 10%.
I mean, do
so
some math there, yeah.
That's right. So if I ask for one, they don't have to accept that request. But then the problem, a couple weeks ago, I got a note on my door saying if I wanted to keep using one of those EVs, I was going to have to pay $95 a month to use it. And they can do that, but just because I just don't drive enough, it's not worth it. So I'm not doing it.
Boo to Kaylee's landlord.
Is that dedicated to you, by the way, the $95?
What do you
for
mean,
the parking
dedicated?
Space? Dedicated to you. Like you would be able to use it anytime you wanted.
Right. It would be my spot.
Your spot. Okay.
By the way, for Baywatch fans out there, Alexandra Paul, the actress who played Lieutenant Stephanie Holden, turns out she's a big EV supporter and a KCRW listener, and she says, I would like to offer you, Steve Chiotakis, a test drive in our Chevy Spark EV. So there you go.
I'll take you up on that, Alexandra. I will do that.
She also says if she had a question for KCRW, it would be, what are the downsides of owning a gas car? When you talk about concerns about an EV, can you please contrast it with fossil fuel cars? And Kaylee has a response to that.
Right. So some of the obvious ones, you know, gas cars, they pollute the air more. They're louder. You have to go to a gas station if you're a homeowner. You get to take that chore out of your life. But for people who have access to a charger at home or at work, it really is cheaper to run an EV. So there are benefits. It just depends on your situation.
And then we have Joanne, who says, are we putting all of these batteries? Where are we putting all of these batteries? I'm concerned we're just kicking an issue down the road for yet another generation to clean up.
So this one really is interesting to me. They're lithium ion batteries that do the EV charger, do EV cars, and they require mining rare earth metals. And yes, extracting and manufacturing those batteries they do create more pollution than creating conventional batteries. But if you look at the lifetime of an EV car from being manufactured to when it is at the end of its life compared to a regular car, it does pollute significantly less. It's like comparing apples and oranges, especially here in California, where so much of our electricity is coming from renewable resources like wind and solar.
And by the way, I want to just reiterate that no one was trying to poo-poo the task of getting an EV car. I mean, obviously, there is a tremendous amount of value for the environment, the greater good, things like that. But there are challenges as well.
Of course.
Yeah,
that's right. And of course, we got a lot of feedback from people who just love their EVs. Linda Nichols said, I've been driving electric cars for 19 18 years, and let me tell you, once you drive electric, you will never want to go back to the inconvenience of driving a vibrating, polluting, noisy gas guzzler.
Well, anyway,
we love getting your thoughts and questions on any of our stories, so give us your feedback. You just go to our website, kcrw.com/greaterla, and let us know what you think.
And by the way, while you're there, subscribe to the podcast, would you? Yeah, we can
absolutely
do that. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Christian Bordahl, Kaylee Wells, thanks to you both.
Thank
absolutely
you.
Tomorrow on this program, with the Dodgers back at home tomorrow evening and a do-or-die situation in the playoffs, we meet some of the team's most strident fans, like the folks who actually go to Dodger away games, like fly across the country to watch them. Next on KCRW, DNA with Francis Anderton, Jenna Cagle, Kaylee Wells, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Christine Comito, and Christian Bordahl catapulted us into the air today. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your time and for your ear. Have yourself a great day.